Do you have a tough challenge with your supply chain or logistics? Logur is the intelligent partner that works globally with manufacturers, retailers, and logistics businesses. We help our customers define, buy, and safely implement solutions across the supply chain. If you want a more sustainable future for your supply chain, visit loguru.co.uk. Complete end-to-end satisfaction guaranteed.
Coming up in this episode.
I sort of think back, worked on a large-scale project in the Second Gulf War for the Department of Defense, of which the general said, I've got a couple priorities. Our soldiers need ammunition, and they need candy bars. Those are the two top priorities as far as delivery assurance goes.
The Logistics Collective podcast is a series focused on the logistics industry, where there are many incredible stories to be told. We'll be speaking with those who've worked and are working within the industry today. What have been their experiences, good and bad, since joining, and would they recommend a career in the industry to others? Here's your host, Malcolm Pope.
Welcome to a new Logistics Collective podcast, and this is the third episode covering the early days and our memories and laments about e-sourcing of logistics. And, well, we're going to really walk away from our lamentation, and we're going to actually be future focused now, maybe starting with, the island of opportunity lost. So this technology has achieved an awful lot within my career, and it's sort of strange to say is that the smartest tech that I used was the first tech that I used. And ever since that, I've seen perfectly good and serviceable e-sourcing platform that focused on logistics that do a damn good job, but it was never as good as this. And that isn't rose-tinted. That is a very objective assessment in terms of functionality, ease of use, and the intelligence actually applied within it. I'm rarely rose-tinted. But the key message I sort of hear, and you within my, I guess, my day job as founder of Loguru, we work with a variety of clients, and we work actually on the buying side for logistics solutions now, but we also work with logistics service providers, and we've had a peek behind the veil, and these guys do a fantastic job. You know, the volume that they have to deal with, the volume of tenders coming into them, and sometimes the challenging nature of both time scale and the quality of information that they're given is an unbelievable challenge to them. I sort of pose a thought in terms of, you know, I have Tom and Paul with me again, and it's lovely to have them here again. What do we think is on that island of opportunities lost? You know, if we would have continued a trajectory, we had successes within the events that we run, but what do you think the opportunities that were lost, perhaps?
I think if there's anything that was lost by the lack of widespread uptake of this type of approach was the loss of visibility at scale. I think if you look at the simplest level of optimization of one vehicle, one route going from A to B, if they can come back from B to A full, it's perfect. Life doesn't work that way, but if they can get to that, as soon as you start going to large numbers of lanes, large numbers of loads, variations over days, over weeks, over months, over years, for a single company, it's harder to optimize. The only way to really get to something approaching real optimization is scale. It's across companies. It's a wider market with more participants being able to see more of what's happening.
Heavens, Tom, that sort of sounds like collaboration. Let's come back to it. What are your thoughts, Paul? What's on the island of opportunities lost?
Well, I think, you know, one of the buzzwords these days is resilience. And so I think, you know, by not using this discipline, and I think the habit of the pattern of category management and reusing existing spreadsheet-based RFP options is that we haven't grown iteratively over this time to include more of the things that have cost us money over time. And so having a model and analytics that you continue to add to sort of incrementally based on how the market and things are changing could have helped us avoid a lot of the disruptions that we saw. You look at things like hard drive manufacturing was, you know, 90% of the world's capacity was in a very small part of the world. Now it's a very elementary part of risk management now that you could factor into how you would allocate that, but 90% of the market was impacted by flood in that particular region. So I think, you know, that sort of resiliency was one sort of area. The second one is the sustainability, especially as that relates to logistics. it's such a big creator of carbon emissions that to Tom's point around that sort of scale, being able to kind of optimize the broader network and not just breaking that problem into smaller problems of the southeast part of the U.S. is our category. We'd go out there and source that. And not taking in the factor that the dependencies to other parts of your network, and more importantly, probably your logistics service provider's network. They can go ahead and become more operationally sound and efficient as far as that goes. So I think the sort of combination there of those two factors are opportunities that we've wasted, resiliency and stability.
Okay. And looking at that, I mean, is that pointed more towards the logistics service providers, or is it pointed more to the shippers, i.e. the customers of LSPs? Both?
Yeah, I think that's a both. Yeah, because I think
it must be both.
If you really were to look at the end tier of supply chains and optimizing that, I think that's exactly what Tom was talking about with scale.
Okay. And so, you know, sort of within this, there is an argument I've used, or a statement I've used, to get to total optimization, to get to the perfect solution, you've got to optimize everything, which is a long way of saying is boiling a whole ocean to make a cup of tea. But there are diminishing returns within that. But I absolutely do say that you have to have some scale in order to be able to get to something that is more optimal than today. I think my feeling of lost opportunity is the sense that the LSPs haven't really picked up really smart solutions to help them buy their services better and to be able to manage their inbound tenders and to actually go and see where is the opportunity for profit improvement that they could have, and how could they balance their networks together, and how could they go prospecting for businesses that would not just add to that normal slide of wonderful brands that they're working with or those dots on the map, but actually the most important thing, which is allow them to have a really good tale to talk about sustainability and how they could really drive that, and also how they could make more profit, because in the new world they're going to have to invest like crazy for new sustainable solutions, and so they need to make more profit. And so how are they going to achieve that by being stuck in the current pattern? I don't know.
Yeah, I think you hit on that too, because if you look at the shippers, sustainability is increasingly important to all their suppliers. And they're really sort of getting in the knickers. And so I do think that the LSPs are going to be under substantial pressure in the future months and years, if not already, to demonstrate what they're doing to reduce their carbon footprint and to be able to quantify that. And I do think of large consumer goods companies that I've worked with that have looked at and gone through their suppliers across a wide variety of different categories, but logistics in particular, to ask them for more transparency about who their suppliers are. And not just on logistics services, but office supplies and cardboard and, anything that LSPs are sort of buying, and beginning to look at the service element of things as well. Can LSPs do more? Pack boxes, work distribution centers, not just a single service. And so I think from a buying perspective, as Tom has said about scale, but I think embracing the complexity, knowing that you have the analytical horsepower to be able to solve that and boil it into an outcome-based, trade-off-based sort of scenarios, that's a really sort of important dynamic that folks should be taking advantage of, instead of kind of the pre-baked heuristics of a spreadsheet that we've been using for 10 years.
I think there are elements that are well represented by looking at e-commerce, who arguably, in terms of some of the providers within there, are providing end-to-end supply chain and order management for, in reality, for brands. And so if you want one sort of sense of direction, could be our logistics service providers begin to look a little bit more Amazonian. So they need to grow taller. And
I would say too, retail is a good sort of model there. There's a large box put together yourself furniture company that really looks at things from what they refer to as forest to floor.
Yeah.
And so when they look at how they optimize that, if you think about it, they also refer to it kind of A to D from a transportation logistics point of view, which is I have an initial starting point. I have an option of shipping it via any number of ports as the B. So from A to B is from the forest to a port, then from the port to another port, then from that port to its end destination type of thing. At optimizing all those things, you've got land, you've got ocean, you've got land, you've got other options as far as barges and that kind of stuff go. But looking at that full A to D optimization component was a vision they had that they began over 20 years ago. And now they're executing on that to really great effect. And they've been able to add more and more of their network, more and more of their things that they buy into this sort of model and this approach.
I think there's almost a philosophical loss that I can see over the period, because the approach that we were taking was very analytical. It was very two-handed of, I'm going to help you do better for me, and I'm going to do that by giving something back to you. Have that won over more participants on both sides of the market. I think the attitude towards things, generally technology, would have been better than the fact that general e-procurement tools have been used to buy logistic services, which gives technology a bad taste because it's not really the right set of tools for the job. So it makes technology look bad. So let's keep technology back because it's really just nothing but pain for us.
Yep.
I also think it comes at the expense of innovation and competition. So I think, you know, when a company does embrace this and they've got the competitive differentiation, then the ones that lag get swallowed up. And that's not good for the end consumers, because without that competition, then the larger company can dictate pricing. And that generally comes as inefficiencies of the marketplace. Whereas technology like this could be the great equalizer, where we can vet out innovation and we could look at different competitive operational models. We can evaluate sort of more options that way. But if we're limited in the options now to three large companies that are working in archaic ways, it comes at the expense of sort of innovation and new entrants. And I think that's particularly relevant when we look at things like sustainability or even just the broader environmental sustainability and governance topics in general, that they're such an important piece to the board now that we really do need a lot of competition in there to vet out what are the effective operational models here that are going to win. And so I think we lose on the innovation side of things, the fact that people have not embraced the spy approach sooner.
For me, I would look at some level of sadness in terms of, I mean, we can talk about, you know, Tom's further development and the wonderful world of collaboration. And I'll give a shout out to an organization called LUPEG, and that's on lupeg.com, which is ELUPEG, which is the European Logistics Users, Providers and Enablers Group, which I had an involvement more than a decade ago in terms of helping to manage a collaborative working group focused on FMCG. And they were seeking to drive a level of collaboration in order to be able to deal with the empty running that was endemic throughout European logistics operations. Now, we'll come to that. But my view is, if I look at it, modal shift is something that we should seek to drive. But the difficulty about modal shift is that unless you're looking at the big picture, and the big picture informs investment in infrastructure and investment in new services. And if you don't take that big picture, you're always going to be stuck on a truck. And I find it fascinating as an island, you know, in the UK as an island, as a series of islands, an archipelago, if you like, that we do so little distribution, intra the island of Great Britain. So we have ferry services that go to Ireland, ferry services that go to continental Europe. But we are way less than 1% of total volume of anything shifted that gets moved by sea. And the furthest point away you can be from a port in this country is 89 miles. So you then look at it and say, well, okay, why aren't we doing something different? Well, the reason why, nobody's going to invest in that because, well, they're not going to go and invest in a load of new ferries and a load of new ro-ro operations or container ship operations on the basis of a whim. You know, I will build it, they will come. Well, that's not going to happen. So, you know, it's really sort of building on what you said before. If you can show people the facts, you know, you can give people the data, you can all of a sudden say, hey, we should be doing this. And by the way, roughly, it's 50 times less emissive by unit weight to move on even a smoky old ro-ro ferry than it is on a truck. Also in terms of creation of rail services, or why can't we actually use this big view of data to be more creative? That, I think, is one of the biggest losses.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of that relates to the LSP's inability or unwillingness to invest in forecasting tools. because that forecast accuracy, you know, is sort of one big component of uncertainty, right? From a planning horizon, you know, I'm much more effective dealing with actuals. I know here my sort of orders here, versus the farther out I go in my planning horizon, the more uncertainty I have, you know, and the more I expose myself from a risk management perspective. So I think that idea, sort of the concept here of forecast accuracy is something that is undervalued by LSPs in particular. And they should have probably more confidence, or at least should begin to put confidence ratings on their sort of planning exercise, so they can take advantage of these multi-modes. And then also, I think category management gets in the way a lot of times from a shipper perspective, because they do make it difficult for LSPs by breaking their RFPs down into ocean, less than truckload, truckload, small parcel, air freight, and they're asynchronous. Very few of the shippers go out there with all those modes at the same time to allow for folks to look at optimizing or suggesting, hey, if you can move some of that from less than truckload to truckload, here's what you could save. And so there isn't a lot of sort of planning that gets sort of invested in, and the asynchronous nature and the different planning horizons for the shippers and the LSPs, I think those are all timing issues that kind of get in the way of a more efficient market.
I'd certainly agree. What's my qualification? What's my qualification within that? LSPs receive data through tenders, and they either win or lose it. Well, okay, the first view, they'll triage it. Do I want to respond to this or not? Yes, no. Okay, and then I'll respond to it, and then I'm either going to win or I'm going to lose it. But all of that data is still present. And so somewhere there exists a, you know, arguably a poorly coordinated lump of massive data when some of these guys are receiving 100 tenders a week. Yeah, there is a massive amount of data, and reality is that for an awful lot of market sectors, the data stays fresh for a pretty long time. And so even looking at it on a historic basis, you could turn around and say, okay, there's gold in them that hills. You could go and look at that and say, okay, I need to think about this big data differently. But then, okay, Go ahead, Paul.
Just to reinforce that point with a real life case study or use case is look at airlines and when you're going to book a flight, and it'll tell you what the on-time percentage is. I can't remember the last time I saw that in, you know, business-to-business transport where folks are showing that this is how predictable this lane is. That would be hugely valuable to LSPs from a planning perspective to see what the predictability of that is. And so not just showing the last 6 months or year of information, but maybe showing, you know, on a lane-by-lane basis, this is how consistent it is from a timing perspective, from a performance and a quality perspective and our expectations.
I mean, I guess I'm old school made new. And I remember I was looking after my first, if you like, logistics supply chain role was manually in a pretty large production site, you know, that was producing something of the 6,000-7,000 tons of food product in a week. Across about 15 production lines and then some bulk distribution within there. And I was planning that on an end-to-end basis. And then I got into the demand planning. I always looked at forecast on the basis of, I would pick it up almost in a, how could I describe it? A more through experience than good planning, but you would have conversations with the various sales directors in terms of what their forecasts were, and you'd poll them and you would ask them, and then you'd turn around and say, okay, you've made a sort of promise to me. And you would then work out who actually understood their business and who did not. And so you would then put a greater or lesser validity in terms of that forecast on the basis of how reliable has this person been. So to my mind, there is value to forecasting. There are a lot of businesses that completely get themselves, I want a 99% accurate forecast. Okay, then, when is the brain implant going in everybody so that we can actually understand what are they going to want to do next and when do they change their mind? And that is the only way that you can sort of get, you know, really get to it. But there is certainly a need. I mean, the quality of information and quality of data. I mean, okay, we can talk about cleanliness of data. I mean, even at this stage, you know, you would sort of argue pretty much everybody's systemized to some extent. Why is the quality of data coming out of businesses junk on occasions? What is it in terms of that sort of integrity of use of data and presentation of data? Why does it always, you know, it's not a solid piece of cloth. It looks like lace.
Well, I think in my experience, it's because companies will make as good use of data as they can that suits their needs, but not worry about how well it suits anyone else's, even their trading partners, so that they're happy with what they're seeing, but it may be only 30% of what a good trading partner needs to see in order to be a better trading partner. And there isn't an attitude of, I need to make them better so that I get better.
Certainly, and absolutely agree there. I have a real question. I mean, what other prizes do you think have been missed?
Let's say, coming back to your previous question as well, that there's a lot of silos of information. It kind of builds off what Tom's point is here, which is the silos satisfy the people in the silo, or as you've talked about before, Malcolm, the bubble. So you're in the bubble, this is important to us, this is what my manager wants, so we do it that way, but it doesn't roll up sort of well there. And I think the point that we're talking about here, what's being missed opportunity-wise, is a broader optimization of your business, where you've got the dependencies. So that, as you talked about, Malcolm, we'll go into more detail here, around this sort of bubble in the foam sort of concept here, where you want to look at it, as a sort of optimizing things, but where you can't optimize, you want to go back into this sort of broader opportunity at the foam to find opportunities for additional efficiencies and sort of savings as far as that goes. But I don't want to steal your thunder, Malcolm, as far as the bubble.
No. I mean, it's, for me, the reality, I prefer bubbles to silos. I don't want any nuclear missiles, thank you very much. Bubbles seem more comfortable somehow. But for me, it's basically looking at any organization and the way that they organize their logistics quite often is disconnected. So we'll talk about things like, collaborative planning and forecasting and all of that. And so there might be some relationship with our customers that might have a little bit more collaboration ongoing with it. With our suppliers, perhaps less so. So the vertical view, there's some evidence of that. On a horizontal view, there's sort of less so. And so the sort of bubble and foam concept is, you put all of your operations within the bubble. And there are going to be some that you can't improve. If it's a full truckload going A to B, and there's another full truckload going from B to A, how can you do better than that? But you then might go to the next level, which is, I've got something that's sort of acceptable and it's optimized. It might be a multi-drop. But you might have a question, is there a better option for that? Because multi-drop will involve quite a lot of diverting mileage and, some level of loss of vehicle fill over a period of time. And so, therefore, is that the best solution? And, it is if you're operating in the bubble. And then you're going to have other stuff that is you can't optimize. You can't put it together with anything else. And so what you're then saying is that the market will optimize that. And so my simple proposition is that if we could think about this differently and say, what should remain in the bubble? And then, you've then got a connecting foam of intelligence that turns around and says, I'm going to search for something that makes me whole, that makes, that is more sustainable, more cost effective, more service effective. I think, but that means that you're sort of saying, you're taking what is already quite a complex problem for a single organization to solve, and then you're saying, it's bigger than my brain can understand. And that's the point in my mind whereby that's the point you say, all of this new technology stuff, all of this AI, all of this stuff that's actually out there, how can we actually ask it a bold, really searching question about stuff that we don't know how to solve and we maybe don't understand, but if you can provide me with that solution, it's going to make a massive difference both to the profitability and survivability of my own business and its sustainability.
Sorry, but the challenge is always going to be, if all you're asking about is what's in your bubble, you'll get a better answer, but it's going to be a better answer only based on what you've already got. Unless you've got everybody else's phone, you're never going to get a better answer, because what's always going to be a better solution is a single delivery. Because if you have one delivery a day and it has everything you need in it, that's going to be better than a bunch of multi-drops that each one gives you something of what you need. But to get that, you need a very different philosophy to how you're going to deliver your products. how you're going to collaborate with potentially your competitors.
I'd also think there's an opportunity, not just in the macro network sense of data across the collaboration aspect, but in the detail of your own data. I sort of think back I worked on a large scale project in the Second Gulf War for the Department of Defense, of which the general said, I've got a couple priorities. Our soldiers need ammunition and they need candy bars. Those are the two top priorities as far as, delivery assurance goes. But when you looked at the order of detail, we didn't have that level of detail in there. So how can you prioritize or optimize some of this stuff when you don't have the associated detail? So oftentimes when we look at the shipment data in particular, it's abstracted to a degree that you really can't look at that. And so I think attribution and more detail in that would also help you make a much more nuanced piece to say, hey, I can slow roll this because this commodity is not that important. I do need to fast track this. And that drives modes. And so I think the other opportunity here is, more this multimodal opportunity of going out there, as we talked about before, across modes to look at that tied in with this attribution as to what you're shipping and how important that shipment is. So that would also drive, transit times, what the quality is, and my comfort level with going with maybe a risky supplier versus not going with risky supplier.
So, Paul, do you think you can do that with a spreadsheet?
No, definitely not. But I think there's an opportunity, again, I think also incrementally, that's an opportunity that we've lost over this time. Technology has been around for 30 years. And had you started 30 years ago, you would have built out a model incrementally every year that would have gotten better. And so you would have been able to sort of enhance the resiliency of your sort of supply chain by adding attributes that fit you in the year past. They go out there now, and you also would have been able to go out there, I think, and deal with more complicated questions, add more suppliers, look at more lanes, add more modes. And so I think you could have incrementally over that 30 years, that would have been an opportunity, for us to sort of improve. That being said, start the journey now, right? Let's move off the spreadsheets.
So, Paul, I think you've just given me some inspiration to irrelevantly innovate. So I'm going to propose the Hershey bullet. Yeah, and see whether or not you could get that sort of combination of ammunition and candy bar in one. But certainly not. I mean, the other thing that I get, you mentioned a point there which really triggered with me, and I sort of said, it's the want versus need argument. And so we turn around and we see a tendency to increase the speed and the pace within supply chain. I want it this week. I want it tomorrow. I want it today. I want it now. And all of that is want. But what was the need really? And what is the consequence for the difference between want and need? And I'll guarantee you the consequence that will have it'll have an impact on cost and profitability. And it will definitely have an impact in terms of sustainability. And so where I would come to in terms of if I was saying, well, what are the solutions of the future? I would say sustainability has to become an integral part of how we tender. I really do. And I think it's also an integral part of how we optimize the day-to-day. But Tom, let me sort of take you back to the wonderful world of LUPEG. And my vast frustration within LUPEG always was that we got a lot of people that were nodding and saying, yes, we need to do something about this. And we had some really good and useful conversations. But it came down to the data.
Yes. We built specifically for use within LUPEG. A platform that we called a request for collaboration. And what it enabled companies to do was to put in their transportation requirements anonymously. So they could see theirs, but nobody else could see whose the other traffic contained was. And we churned it. We found optimizations within it. And then we were able to introduce collaborative partners and say, we've found these lanes where you can run 2/3 of the whole thing full now, whereas at the moment it's running at least 50% empty. And therefore, you guys should be able to go to your suppliers and say, how do we optimize this? And we ended up having a discussion very like, I think the term we used at the time was the telephone, The first telephone was completely and utterly useless. You need at least two people to have a conversation on the phone. And ideally, you need more than two. And the telephone only really became useful when lots and lots of people had it. Well, it's the same thing with this request for collaboration, as we needed as many companies as possible to throw their volume in so it could be churned, so we could find them opportunities. And basically, we were giving it away. And we could not get people to buy a telephone and commit to putting in enough volume that it made really any difference for anybody. And that was intensely frustrating.
So if we're sort of looking at that's the addressing of, I mean, imagine the transport turnover within Europe just by itself and saying that, well, okay, let's say we could have taken 25% empty running down to 20%. 5% of that number is enormous.
Well, at any point in time within LUPEG, we had a double-digit proportion of the traffic moving through Europe sitting in an LUPEG meeting.
Yes. Yeah.
One of the issues, too, is just the episodic nature of logistics sourcing, right? We tend to go out with tender events that to cover 1 year, 3 year pieces. Whereas I think if you wanted to make this more efficient, that this would become a continuous discipline where this information is constantly fed. And it's not something that is batched in a month or quarterly basis. It's not just historic information, but you're mixing this as a continuous discipline. So now you do have more confidence. You've got more transaction information. You've got more sort of integrity in what's sort of happening through this sort of bigger collaborative approach.
I've been mulling eternal tender platforms for logistics for four plus years now. And what I would say is that the best way to get good at doing something is to have to do it all the time.
Yeah.
That's the practice. And the real difficulty about most of the tendering processes is that it's always a new team that has to come in and do it again, because we haven't built the processes correctly in terms of sourcing. So we haven't engaged the organization. And in theory, all of this data is available. All of it is available. And if you said the result of this is that you've got a shop window almost that had to be correct, it would drive an awful lot of better behaviors within the. But that notwithstanding, if you've got all of these shop windows, you could then get some clever LSP bot that would be going around there and saying, how do I actually optimize? This is what I'm looking for. Have you got what I need?
Yeah, and that's an opportunity, forward market.
Could I put...
yeah, forward market.
Yes,
exactly right.
It's a forward market. Please call me, yes. You know. And that sort of, you know, if we're looking at a more intelligent view of the tools around us. And by the way, my regret on the island is that, I don't think many people got it. Yeah. Whilst we, you know, they didn't actually understand the intellectual rigor and the technical ability of what was in front of them. I mean, the other lost opportunity, I would say, is not enough people working for LSPs have elected to really come and be trained on how to use sourcing platforms. The fact that I've run well over 100 of these, and I can sort of look at one occasion whereby, hey, he's got smarts. Whereas an awful lot of the time it is, well, I look at how people are preparing to go into this and they're not well prepared. And actually the systems that they're using should force them to be prepared, you know? It's a bit like whether it's Captain Picard on the Enterprise, you know, attack pattern, Delta, Victor, whatever it was. That's what you almost need to have within this. That's the sort of smarts that you would seek to apply. But this sort of eternal tender that, you know, I absolutely support that, because I think if you were sensible enough to give that visibility across the board, then you're going to find optimization. The core fear, I always remember we want a major retailer wanted to come and be part of LUPEG. And I always remember the FMCG folks around me going, oh, no, we can't have one of them in here. you know. And the truth of the matter is, it was a missed opportunity. It was a vastly missed opportunity because the retailers are the other element of this, where the much larger scale utilizers of logistics services, and in fact, often they are their own logistics service provider. And it's just, you know, it's, you know, there is a fear that, you know, people are going to get utterly screwed over in terms of renegotiation of price on the basis of that collaboration. And that was the stop. So there needs to be some rules of engagement. On that note, I'm going to conclude this episode, and really thanks to Paul and Tom for participating. Please look out for our next episode. Remember that you can access all of our logistics podcasts on logisticscollective.com. And please like and follow us, and we'll inform you when the next episodes are being published. We also publish on all of the common podcast platforms, including Spotify.
You can get in contact by email, podcast@logisticscollective.com, or leave a voice message on our website, logisticscollective.com. The podcast is a production by LeGuru.